in the country. So yes, where we found ourselves, many times there was a local population, but also a population that sought refuge in the same place. Many come to the hospital following injury due to violence. And then the other group of patients we would see were mostly women with complications from pregnancy. And many times they would require surgical attention as well to save their lives and the lives of their babies. What struck me most during my missions was the number of adolescent girls that came to the hospital with complications from pregnancy. Many times, you know, at 14 and 15, the body is not physiologically ready to carry a pregnancy. And many times we would see obstruction, which means that the baby is not able to come out. And in those cases, a cesarean section is necessary. So the concept that surgery is a luxury is a concept that we surgeons are trying to fight, because it should form part of primary healthcare and part of simple medical assistance. Because currently, 5 billion people, so that's 2/3 of the world population, does not have access to surgical care. And that leads to 17 million deaths every year, which is more than HIV, AIDS, TB, and malaria combined. Surgery should form part of primary medical assistance, because many conditions, from injury, from complications, from pregnancy, cannot be treated with medical assistance alone, and they require surgical care.
The courageous women profiled in this program work amid instability and upheaval caused by war and other violence, intensified by climate change, food insecurity, and the mass migrations of people desperate to survive. In addition to saving lives, these women stand as advocates for the world's isolated and displaced. Dr. Nima Kaseje.
I think we are forgetting the fact that we are all human beings and that our lives are interconnected and we need to take care of each other. I think more needs to be done in terms of peace building, because if there was peace in many of these regions, people would not leave. So that's number one. And when we do receive people seeking refuge, I think they need to be treated with kindness, with empathy, just because we're all part of humanity.
I've heard newborn babies wailing like a mourning dove, and old men with broken teeth that's stranded without love. Do I understand your question then? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Shelter from the storm.
And that's it for this Women's Desk edition of Making Contact, produced by the Women Rising Radio Project. Special thanks to Doctors Without Borders and Jessica Brown. Thanks also to Matthew Crozier and his team at CKCU-FM in Ottawa, Canada, to Yvonne Bing in the kitchen studio in Geneva, Switzerland, and to Mikel Mestres with Angel Sound in Barcelona, Spain. Music and audio courtesy of Vice News, National Public Radio, The News Hour, and Cassandra Wilson. Women Rising Radio's producer is Lynn Feinerman, audio engineer Stephanie Welch, and I'm your host, Sandina Robbins.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals. I'm Deb Stedman, your host, and my guest today is Jo Becker. She'll be talking about a subject that probably has been on our minds a lot lately: how to keep our precious animals safe if we have a personal emergency, or worse yet, are caught up in a large-scale disaster. Joe comes to us with more than 20 years of experience as a community emergency response team graduate and has participated in and helped to plan full-scale disaster exercises for people and animals. In addition, she's furthered her expertise by taking more than 150 courses, including incident command system training, as well as attending animal law and pet rescue conferences. Good morning, Joe. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Good morning, Deb. Wonderful to meet you.
Okay. In the wake of several devastating hurricanes and forest fires across the country this year, some of them close to home, most people are coming to understand the value of being prepared, or as your website puts it, to expect the unexpected and think the unthinkable. First off, let's make a distinction between what's an emergency and what is a disaster. Can you please explain the difference?
Sure, you bet. Good question to start with. An emergency is typically a shorter term and often a more isolated incident. It might be a medical emergency affecting just your household or you individually, just your animal. Typically, resources in the community are available. You can pick up the phone and call 911. You can get in your vehicle and drive down the road to a hospital or an emergency animal clinic, that sort of thing. A disaster typically is larger scale. It's affecting more people, and community resources, normal first responders and assistance may not be available. Strategically, I use the two terms interchangeably, however. When I'm teaching classes or talking to people about preparing themselves and their animals for disaster, it really doesn't matter if I put myself in the position of whether I'm having a heart attack or my cat or my horse is seizuring or my house is on fire or the whole neighborhood's going up in flames or the whole West Coast just fell off into the ocean.
Oh, it's an
emergency and it is a disastrous situation for me. So I tend to speak in those terms and use them interchangeably, but there is a difference between the two, definitely.
Okay, good. Well, emergencies and disasters have always been part of the human experience to some extent. So what led you to take a turn in your career path to focus on preparing animal guardians for these types of events?
Well, good question. And you elevated my experience a little bit. I've been studying emergency management and disaster response for about 12 years. Before that, I was in real estate sales, so I came from the housing industry. And about 12 years ago, I shifted to doing housing nonprofit work. I worked for a statewide fair housing organization that focused on civil rights and housing. And while I was there, I did a lot of marketing functions. One of them was speaking and teaching classes on fair housing law, a dry legal subject. And I became known as an advocate with a balanced perspective. I could keep people awake talking about a legal subject for 3 or 4 hours.
Well, that's to your credit.
Right. And so, you know, I really developed my skill and a passion for speaking, presenting, networking, writing, those various things. During the same 10 years that I was at that nonprofit, I was also studying in my personal time emergency preparedness, disaster response. And what had gotten me started was a community emergency response team class. CERT is a FEMA program that is administered locally at the city, county, or police or fire department level. And I took that, and my impetus for it was I had several animals, household pets at the time, and I realized, I think I must have heard several fires in the news or something like that, and I realized I didn't have a plan, and I could not physically carry all my animals out the door if we needed to evacuate. So that got me started, and I literally just got bit by the bug. So I spent the next 10 years taking different courses and classes related to disasters and animals. And a couple of years ago, I left the nonprofit to start a business focused on speaking and writing about animals, disasters, and you know, various things.
Great. So now that you're making your living teaching preparedness classes and doing writing and so forth, is there a substantial demand for this type of program or training? And who are your students?
Wow, those are great questions. So yes, there's a lot of interest in the subject. Some people are really interested in the preparedness aspect. Some people are really interested in the animal aspect. For me, it's all about the animals. That's where my passion lies and where I got my start. But for those that aren't necessarily thinking about animals, maybe they don't have a pet themselves currently, whatever, I find that talking about animals or children or elders tends to pull on people's heartstrings, and they'll do for others before they do for themselves. So, oh yeah, yeah, I've got to get little Johnny some supplies, or I need to get, you know, food and water for my pet. And if they stop and think about it, they realize they need to get some for themselves as well, because they don't want to use the supplies, the emergency supplies they set aside for their animals, their loved ones.
Right, or get my grandma all set up who's
right.
trying to, you know, maintain herself in her own home.
Mm-hmm, and, yeah. mm-hmm, exactly. So it becomes a bit of a snowball, a twofer, if you will. So whether folks are really into the animal angle or really just kind of curious about preparedness and how to approach it step by step without getting overwhelmed and being, you know, being a scary, expensive process, I like approaching either of those angles.
Okay, so when you teach a class, is it a one-day or a half-a-day program, or is it a continuing series of educational courses?
I offer both. In terms of speaking nationally, more often than not, be a one-time thing. My typical classes run 3 to 4 hours. I can painfully cram as much as possible into a shorter session, or I could go longer. I got a lot more material. Locally at the community college level, I've offered one-time classes, and I've also offered series where we come back week after week and go in more depths into different kind of disasters and what to pack and how to pack it and what to expect from animals and animal body language and communication, so you can enhance the bonds and also know what to expect for them to act differently during a disaster. And, you know, so there's a lot of different avenues we can dive into.
Yeah. Besides or in addition to being very practical information, it sounds fascinating as well. Okay, let's talk a little bit now about the kinds of emergencies and disasters that we're most prone to here in the Northwest. I think it's a long list, but could you talk a little bit about each one?
Well, sure. In the Northwest, let me back up a moment. This summer, I took a 4-week course that FEMA offers for emergency managers called Basic Academy. It's the first time it was offered in Oregon, and I'm one of less than 500 people in the country who have taken it, which is quite something because I'm not actually an emergency manager by profession. One of the segments of that class was the science of disaster, and we talked about the different kinds of disasters that happen around the country and around the world. And it turns out there are only two that we're not susceptible to here in Oregon. We don't really have the makings for hurricanes or sinkholes, but everything else is fair game. We certainly have seen the wildfires, and we are thinking ahead to the winter storms, the power outages, the flooding. There's all the man-made stuff, the chemical spills and the terrorists and civil unrest. There's dam failures. I mean, everything you could think of could happen here. Which, for a moment for me in that class, became a little overwhelming, like, I need a move. But, you know.
Right, you can be a specialist in each type of
exactly.
disaster, because I've seen the list,
yes.
and it's a long one.
It's a lot, like 20 different things.
Yeah.
Interestingly, we had instructors from around the country teaching that class. I remember one gentleman from Texas was saying, well, we got those sinkholes, we got them big time, and so, you know, different parts of the country are susceptible to different things. There is literally nowhere in the country or nowhere in the world that's safe from every possible disaster.
But for here, you know, we're worried, of course, about the big one,
the big earthquake, yes.
Forest fires and probably flooding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those, I think, would be the big ones, and mm-hmm. we hear the most about, we perhaps fear the most. But statistically, home fires are the most common and the most deadly. There is a residential fire starting somewhere in the U.S. every 86 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, I always knock on wood when I say it, but there's no reason that the next one isn't my home. And that really is what got me started in preparing and thinking about what to do for my animals in that case, making arrangements with my neighbors that if I'm not home, you know, here's where they hide and here's where their carriers
yes.
are. And, you know, all of those kind of things just to be prepared for whatever the disaster
right.
is.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you, in a minute we're going to cover the actual prep kit that, mm-hmm. you know, you talk about and teach about. But besides making that all-important emergency kit for ourselves and our pets, are there any other ways to prepare in advance for major occurrences? Like you were saying, have a backup plan in case you aren't home.
Yes, several things. So a lot of things come to mind. I'm trying to organize them in my head. First of all, having having gathered the information about your animals, whether you have household pets or you have livestock, whatever the case may be, have a list of their conditions, their feeding routine, their habits and particular personality traits and those sort of things, a list of your veterinarians and whatever other specialists you have. And a great tool that I have for that on my website on the animal resources page is a pet planner. It's very inexpensive. Each page gives you a page to write down that information for each animal, and a little pocket to put pictures and documents for the animals. That's produced by a Northwest company, which is kind of cool. So it's the one way to get yourself organized and have all of the information about your animal in one place.
Sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is, we'll talk about the kit, and I think it's important for folks to prepare physically with supplies. But at some point a couple of years ago, it occurred to me that, you know, obviously if you don't have the disposable income to buy a bunch of supplies, or worse yet, you put out the money and the time gathering the supplies and they're compromised in a disaster, like the roof caves in on them, what do you do? What I find most encouraging about disaster preparedness is that just thinking about what you would do in this situation or that situation, the exercise of having gathered supplies or talked to your neighbors or, you know, figured out what your safe room in your house is or where you would evacuate to, those thought processes alone increase your likelihood of surviving any disaster and going on to thrive afterward. So your question is, what can you do to prepare? Just be thinking about
right.
it.
So the mindset, you know, just having that mindset
yeah.
is very, very important.
Definitely.
Just one quick question before we cut away for a short break. Are there any safe places for animals in the greater Portland area? In other words, has Portland Metro have any kind of shelters for animals specifically for these emergency scenarios?
The answer would be yes and no. In any disaster where people or where animals are housed following an incident, it depends on the incident. So if you think of an earthquake, it would depend on which structures are still safe and sound and outside the danger area. If you think about flooding, you know, same thing. So the authorities, the emergency managers, have designated certain buildings, locations, fairgrounds, schools, warehouses, whatever, churches, where people and or animals can be housed, but they're not announced ahead of time because you don't know which ones.
What the condition's going
right.
to be in that particular
right.
place.
So definitely keep aware if an incident happens, be listening to the news for where to go.
Good advice. We're going to take a short break now, so don't go away. We're back, and you're listening to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. We've been talking with Joe Becker, professional disaster preparedness specialist, about getting ready for emergencies now so that our pets will be protected later. Joe, we all want to protect our beloved pets to the greatest extent possible, so let's get down to the nuts and bolts of how to prepare for these extreme situations. Can you please talk about the basic prep kit that you recommend every pet guardian have? What essentials go into that?
Okay, sure. So when I'm teaching a class, I typically assign some homework at this point. To me, disaster prep kits are very personalized. So I'll play with you, banter with you for a moment and toss it back to you. What do you think would be the first thing to think of in terms of essentials, life-sustaining? What would you want to have first?
Water.
Yeah, definitely.
And food,
there
water.
You go.
Food and
so
water.
Start
yeah.
there, definitely. Mm-hmm. So just like people supply lists that you see online or on checklists and that sort of thing, start with the basics, food, water, a way to contain and transport the animal. So that would, depending on what animal, kind of animal you have, leashes, collars, harnesses, crates, carriers, harnesses, halters, trailers, depending on your animal. A way to identify your animal, So, and with all of these things, think redundancy. So most of our household pets have a collar and an ID tag. People have different opinions about microchipping and branding and those sort of things, but think of at least a second way to identify that animal, the collar.
Yeah, can small animals like, you know, hamsters and smaller mammals, can they be microchipped as well?
I believe so. I haven't had smaller animals in my own household, so I haven't actually gone through that, but I don't see any reason why not. So there's certainly something to ask a veterinarian about. Think not only of permanent identification, but also temporary. So are you familiar with the Tyvek material that's used in building a home and the Tyvek suits?
Plasticky.
Can't rip it, doesn't tear.
It's silver color generally.
Or white, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So I got some of that that's made into a little, like a bracelet. Like the little things you get at the carnival or when you check into a hospital, a little band that you can't pull off. I've stuck some of the Tyvek bands like that in my animals' carriers, because I have household animals, with a Sharpie pen. And I can write, if we have to evacuate quickly, we leave, their regular collars are lost, or the information changes, I can write their name, my name, and whatever my current phone number or contact information is on that collar. So a way to identify the animal.
Great idea.
In the moment.
Yeah.
If you got bigger animals, you can braid something into a horse's mane. I mean, there are various
things. Or maybe
things.
Pieces of elastic or something like that, stretchy elastic that can be stapled or taped together with duct tape and then written on again with the pen.
Definitely be resourceful with what you got in the moment if your regular supplies are gone or you haven't gathered them up yet. Yes, definitely. So food, water, any medication the animal requires, containment and transportation, identification. Again, gathering up information. I mentioned the pet planner. That's one tool for gathering up your animal's specific details. But also gather up community information. You asked about, are there designated places for animals in a disaster? You're going to want to have a radio on hand to listen for that current top of the moment information, but in advance you can gather a list of phone numbers and addresses and directions for your friends and family you think that might be outside the danger zone and would be willing to receive you and help you house your animals. Hotels, particularly hotels even in blue sky days that take pets, would be a good example. Shelters and emergency clinics and that sort of thing, fairgrounds, again, that you think would be outside the danger zone, campgrounds, if you were going to camp out with your animals outside the hot zone, the danger area. Gather all that sort of information and stick that in your kit.
Okay, but again, you know, the idea of to think these things out ahead of time. What are my options? What are my possibilities?
Where could I go?
What is, you know, in a worst-case scenario, to have plan A, B, C, D, or as many as you can think of. Yeah.
Exactly.
And because the more that you have to choose from, more likely it is that you'll have at least one option that's going to work for you in any case.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you said, plan A, B, C, and D. That made me think of something I wanted to share in terms of kits. So my philosophy is that personal and pet preparedness needs to be personalized, needs to be individual, depends on how big your household is, how many animals you have, what kind, what species, what their conditions are, what your budget is, what your storage space is like, how much you can carry, etc. So, I mean, this is a very personalized process, in my opinion. So for my personal supplies, I have chosen to bundle things into backpacks and bags that I can sling over my shoulder or over my arm. And I've gone a step further to number them. So let me explain that.
You are organized.
Giving it some thought. So if there's a split-second emergency, the house is on fire, I am working on training my cats to come to the bedroom by treating them each month when I test the smoke alarms, treat them in the bedroom and training them to come there when they hear that alarm. Statistically, most home fires happen in the middle of the night when we're probably in our bedrooms. So train them to come to the bedroom and then we evacuate through the window. if I have a little more time, if it's not a house fire, I've got a little bit more notice, I will grab the cats as I run through the house, go out the front door where I can get my keys and my wallet and head to the car. If I get to the car and I know I've got a little bit more time, you know, not all disasters come immediately. Sometimes you have hours or days notice. So if I have a little more time, I will put the cats in the car. And I keep collapsed crates in my trunk. So if I have to drive off at that moment, I have something to put them in when we get to somewhere safe. If I have more time, I will put them in carriers, which I keep right by the in the closet by the front door on my way out. If I have time, I'll go back into the house. And in that same closet, I have bag number one and bag number two. And if my hands are now free because the cats are in the car, I'll put bag one and two over my shoulder. And those have what I decided were most important to me. A little bit of food and water for me and for them, that list of where we can go, the directions to emergency clinics and hospitals and shelters and campgrounds and those sort of things, gloves and flashlights and just basic things I think we'd need. If I have more time, I can go back and get bag three and four and five and six, and then I have a list on the closet door that says, so that I don't have to think. I don't expect to have any brain cells in that moment.
Right.
What to do next.
You'd probably be in a panic to a certain extent. Yeah.
Yes. So I get the bags out into the car, and my list reminds me that there are coolers stored in my shed outside. I can dump everything out of the trunk of my car, put the coolers in, and dump food from my fridge and freezer into that cooler. And I've now just extended the amount of time that the cats and I can sustain on our own, food-wise, exponentially. I've just expanded how long we could be on our own.
And what about non-perishables, like canned food?
Those are already in my bags that I've been carrying out.
Way ahead of me.
I also have a utility trailer I can hook up to the car and drive off, and that's got more supplies, sleeping bag and tent and things like that. And then if I still have time, I have a list to myself of, you know, I might want the family china and my computer and things that I may not be able to replace, pictures and, you know, what have you. And I don't want to have to think about that in the moment.
Okay. And you have your personal documents and things like that in one of those bags.
Yes. Somewhere. Copies of the documents are in bag number one and two. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I thought I was prepared, but now I'm thinking I've got a long way to go. Oh, that is wonderful information.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much. And I know that there is more information on, on your website. I did go to your website, and you had talked about a pet emergency planner that's available. You can purchase that there. But you have something that I think everyone would like to have or download right away, and that for free, and that is your lost pet flyer. Can you describe that for us and tell us why it's important to fill it out before a disaster strikes?
I did, and I brought a sample here so you can help me describe it if you'd like.
Oh, it's beautiful,
So the idea with the lost flyer is to make one now before you need it. You might need it on a good day when simply the gate or the door got left open and your fur baby got out. You might need it in a disaster where you literally may not have electricity to make the flyer and print the copies. So make it now before you need it.
Good point, yeah.
And several points. Get pictures of the animal from different angles with any identifying marks. Include all the vital statistics about the animal and your various contact information. And I include my out-of-area emergency contact person as well, just in case this is happening in the middle of a disaster and the local lines are down. And then also include pictures of anyone in your household who might go to a shelter or emergency animal shelter to try to find and claim the animal if you get separated in the disaster. That can help with approving identity.
Great. Very good.
So there's a Word document on my website on the animals page and then the resources page. Folks can download that template for free and put in their own info and pictures and go from there. And again, think redundancy. I would keep a digital copy on your devices or store it online and then print out a few copies so that if a disaster strikes or you simply have a lost pet on a quote-unquote good day, you can start distributing those right away.
Okay, great. And before I ask you what other information is available on your website, why don't you give us your website address, please?
Yeah. You bet. It's joebecker.weebly.com. Now, some of those words are a little tricky. My name is Joe, J-O, and the last name is Becker. It starts with a B like boy. So joebecker.weebly, that's W-E-E-B-L-Y.com.
Okay, and we'll put that contact info on our program page, okay, on the Voices for the Animals program page as well. Great. And so what other information is available on your website then?
Okay, so I mentioned evacuating out the bedroom window. When I first did this a few years ago, I had three cats at the time, and I stuffed the two littler ones in pillowcases, the bigger one in her own pillowcase, and zip-tied them, crawled out, pushed the screen out, crawled out the door, whimpering, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry," till I ran around to the front of the house, got in the front door, and let them out again. So think about how you would evacuate depending on what the lay of your land, what, you know, do you have a one-story home or a two-story, or what your situation and what kind of animals and house members, household family members you have are.
So you do
practice
an,
it.
Yeah, you do an actual fire drill.
Yes, yes.
Okay, good for you.
And a souped-up version of that pillowcase is a product, another Northwest product called the Evac Sack. It doesn't rip, it doesn't tear, it's got a strap to go over your shoulder, a much handier and much safer.
And that's featured on your website as well. We just have another minute, so can you suggest other ways that our listeners can learn more about emergency preparedness for animals? I know that there are some other organizations out there that have lists and information. And where can they find out about your upcoming classes or events?
Well, again, I'd refer people to joebecker.weebly.com. On that animal resources page, there's a video for pet owners on what they need to know about preparing. That'd be a great place to start.
Okay, super. I'm afraid we're out of time now. Thank you, Joe Becker, for being our guest today and for all the good work you're doing to keep people and their animals safe in emergencies. This is Dab Stedman thanking all our listeners for tuning in today. To hear a podcast of any of our programs, just go online to kboo.fm and click on Audio, then Programs. And please plan to listen in again on the fourth Monday of next month. Until then, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals.
And now the KBOO News at noon for Monday.